From Southside to the world, and in association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.
For April's Book of the Month, we are reviewing a book by British author Susan MacLeod. This is her second novel in the Spellcrackers.com urban fantasy series and is called The Cold Kiss of Death. If you enjoy books about magic, fantastic creatures, forbidden secrets, and in particular vampires, The Cold Kiss of Death could be just what you're looking for. The first book in the series is called The Sweet Scent of Blood. Although it is not essential to have read the first book, it would definitely help you to understand the rather complex plot.
Tavish's underground living area hadn't changed since my last visit. The walls were grey blocks of rough granite, much like the RAF monument above, and the floor was flagged with smooth, dark grey slabs. To one side of the high ceiling space was a low black suede sofa. A black granite slab sat solidly in front of it on a huge, white, long-haired skin rug belonging to some animal that had never roamed the human's world. I never felt comfortable walking on the rug with shoes on, let alone with bare feet. Something told me the granite slab wasn't just there as a convenient coffee table, so I skirted round it and headed for Tavish's office. A glass wall divided it from the rest of the space. The glass wasn't just a stylish break between his living and working areas. When I looked, the complicated buffer spell that protected all his computers from getting zapped by magic lit the glass up like a sun flare. And there was a lot of gear to protect. A 3-high by 5-wide bank of flat-screen computer monitors curved around a selection of keyboards and rollerball mice posed on flexi-stalks. It looked like a cross between a giant's electronic bouquet and a hacker's mega-expensive wet dream. I pulled open the glass door. The low background hum of the electronics buzzed against my ears, and I swallowed back the flat taste of the ionized, recycled air. Most of the monitors were playing sections of one large screensaver, a coral reef with darting shoals of tropical fish, and a pair of sharp-toothed sharks swimming lazily from one screen to another. But the monitor front and centre was paused on the CCTV footage showing me standing in front of Thomas's bakery talking to the florist's boy. My stomach did an anxious little jump at seeing it again. I hooked one leg under me and settled into the leather chair, reaching for the nearest keyboard. "Tavish says to remember the bracelets and the gloves," Finn said quietly from behind me. I stopped, hand in midair. "Thanks," I said, and snagged a pair of the extra-thick surgical gloves from the box under the desk. I snapped them on and pulled them up over my wrists, then gingerly picked up 2 silver cuffs from the tray next to the box. They were 1/2 inch wide and peppered with industrial-grade diamond chips. I clasped them around my wrists on top of the glove so the silver didn't burn my skin. The cuffs and gloves were probably overkill, seeing as each computer had its own individual buffer spell glowing away, but I wasn't going to take the chance of frying their hard drives by not wearing the magical inhibitors. Tavish might like me, but not that much. "Are you okay?" Finn's voice held concern. "I'm fine," I said, still simmering with annoyance over the fight between him and Tavish. "You don't look fine, Jen." I glanced down at the baggy T-shirt that was all I was wearing. Joseph's boxers had been too large for me, and none of the fetish underwear in the mirrored wardrobes had appealed. Tavish's clean-up spell had dried and desanded the T-shirt, but that was it. I sighed. "Okay, I didn't look so good, but hey, what did he expect after all I'd been through? Explosion and deep-sea swimming, anyone?"
The book follows the adventures of Jenny Taylor, the only fae in London. Jenny works for Spellcrackers, an organisation of witches specialising in cleaning up magical messes. Jenny wants to live the quiet life, but her personal life is a mess. She's been haunted by ghosts, her witch neighbours want her evicted, and there's a queue of vampires all wanting to take a bite out of her. To add to her problems, she is also a 3V sufferer, which means she craves the venom vampires produce when biting their victims. In order to deal with her addiction, she has been using a spell to transform herself into a vampire. Sadly, the vampire she turns into is Rosa, who was a real vampire with some very real enemies. Jenny has also been framed for the murder of one of her human friends, and in her efforts to find the real murderer, she faces some of London's most powerful supernaturals.
The red blackness was as before, empty, silent, senseless, nothingness. This time, the mist that circled the blackness was no longer pale and far away, but pressed close and shot through with hot golds and coppers and reds, like the rays of the sun that backlights the dark side of the moon. I didn't want to think what that might mean. The black silk cord tailed down and away below me. Hand grasped tightly around the blood-slick silk, I continued to fall. Where was I? Some sort of limbo place for the soul? And how was this supposed to get me my body back, let alone save virgins and kidnap ghosts? Use my connections, Cosette had said, which was fine, except she hadn't told me how, thanks to Neil the Necro turning up. What I needed was help. But how, when the only people I could talk to were other ghosts, or my local not-so-friendly neighbourhood Necro? Of course, if I could make my way to a graveyard, I could talk to anyone living, whoever happened to be around at midnight. I could even touch them, since I'd be corporeal again for the hour between one day and the next. Except that midnight on All Hallows' Eve is traditionally when demons make their house calls. So midnight was going to be way too late. But I was falling the same way I had after Malik skewered me with the sword. Only then I'd tumbled back to my wedding night. No way did I want to relive that memory. One return visit was around 100 times too many for my liking. I shuddered in the darkness as I kept on sliding down. Malik had called to me the last time, as if from above and below. But still I'd kept dropping, until I'd come round in the hallway the morning after. So did that mean down was the past? But in the past, when I'd been 14, I'd never picked up the Autarch sword. I'd never decided to go hunting, hadn't even met Cosette, so it had been less like a memory and more as if my adult self had travelled back to that time. Could I do that again? Could I pick a time where I could step into my own body and change things? But when? My descent slowed, as if the silken cord wanted to give me a chance to think. The last time I'd revived seemed to be the most obvious point, when Malik had called my soul back to my body and I'd awakened to the realization it was Malik who had chased me on my wedding night. Malik who had sunk his fangs into me, not the Autarch. I felt my hands slip, almost as if the black silken cord was reacting to my thought, and I dropped faster again, the air rushing past me as if heralding an approaching train, and the black silk cord frayed to nothing within seconds. Stunned, I hung in the red blackness, spinning slowly, clutching the thin red thread that was hooked through the knuckles of my left hand. Frustration sliced into me, sharp and painful, like the bronze sword of my memory. Damn! Whatever bond Malik had tied my soul with was broken. So now what? Did I hang around waiting to see if Necro Neil was strong enough to haul me back so I could be part of Hannah's demon debt? Or... I looked at the red thread dangling below me. Necro Neil said he had hooked into my soul at Hope. I took a deep breath, not that there seemed to be any air to breathe, and loosened my tight hold on the thread.
There is a huge amount going on in The Cold Kiss of Death. The book's cover promises magic, mayhem and murder, and there is no shortage of any of those things. You will also get your fair share of demons, sorcerers, goblins, vampires and witches. In fact, every fairy thing you can think of is probably included in this book. Jenny is a strong character who keeps on fighting till the end. There's plenty of action, some sexual tension, and also a touch of romance. If the presence of blood makes you feel a bit queasy, then this is definitely not the book to read, as some of the scenes are pretty gory. However, if you're a fan of fantasy fiction, then this book will probably be a hit with you.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show. Quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened. With Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
I wanted to find out from a real solicitor what happens when you let your insurance company look after your car accident claim. So I spoke to Charles Affer of Affer & Co.
Insurance companies make money from selling your claim to their own legal people. If you want solicitors who you can speak to face to face, someone who worked to achieve the best possible offer of compensation, you're better off choosing someone you know.
Someone you know? That sounds familiar, Charles.
Choose the one you know, Affer & Co.
Call 01642 225 75 or text advice to 81400 now.
With over 80 ensuite bathrooms and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs.
A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick. Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate residential elderly, EMI and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare.
To find out more, please telephone 01642 30 81 88 or email us at info@rosevillecarecentre.com.
Roseville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 245 grams of magnesium.
Hang on, slow down. One tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
To give yourself the best chance of maximum compensation, you need to know that three or four insurance companies dominate the market. So the same insurer could be acting for both sides. You should also know they sell your claim to one of their own solicitors, leading to unwanted calls from all sorts of places. And finally, you need to know that you do have a choice. Don't be pushed into accepting your insurance company solicitors. Make your own decisions.
Choose the one you know, Affer & Co.
Insurers are for cars. Affer & Co. are for people. Call now on 01642 225 75.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse. And every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
Quite rightly so, too. And Suzanne MacLeod, I'm sure, is an extremely lovely lighter. lovely writer who may well be connecting with us as one of our phone features in the near future. She was very pleased, I think, that we selected The Cold Kiss of Death for the April Book of the Month. Was it the April Book of the Month? Was it the May?
Yeah.
May Book of the Month? I'm very confused now.
Well, we read it through April, didn't we?
We read it through April, so it's taking it to the May. People may be looking back at Val McDermott saying that. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Let's move straight to Jill Prowse. Jill, action-packed was what Charlene Harris, who actually created the character Sookie Stackhouse in the whole True Blood series, was concerned with this. There's treachery, blood, body switching and life and death encounters in this action-packed novel, a story well told.
Well, it's very different. That's what I will say straight away. Having not read urban fantasy before and not ever really fancied it, to be fair, it is action-packed. I think that is fair to say. It's certainly that what I found was that it takes you a little while if you're not into that type of book. As Jill rightly said, if you like urban fantasy type books, this is the book for you. But as somebody who isn't, it took me a little while to get into the whole idea of the way the book was written and the characters and everything else. Having said that, I did enjoy it. I found that there was a proper story in there. I think it would have been very easy if she hadn't put a proper story into it for it just to fall away and just be a series of different types of mystical creatures. Whereas it didn't, there was a story to it. And yeah, I will read the next one, The Bitter Seed of Magic, and I will probably get out the library The Sweet Scent of Blood. So there you go. It goes to show that even though it's not something that I was familiar with before, I am quite intrigued by it. And I'm intrigued by the story of that book. So that I do want to see how it started, because there were things in that book which I think, if I had read the first one, would have made more sense to me. And I'd like to see how it ends in the next one.
It's interesting you make that point, because obviously stepping into the middle of a trilogy at any time might not give you the best of feelings. The classic example being, I suppose, The Empire Strikes Back, or maybe The Twin Towers from the Lord of the Rings scenario, and you think, well, where are we going? Or Two Towers, I should say. I initially had an inward groan where I thought, oh, vampires again. And I share this, actually, with another fantasy writer, Sarah Pinborough, who also is not a keen vampire fan, and indeed shares the tale on her recent podcast that she did with us about being at the SFX Weekender, where she went on stage and started off by saying, oh, do we really need another TV series about vampires with respect to being human, only to find she was sitting next to the creator of Being Human, Toby Whithouse. So, you know, Toby Whitehouse, etc. So those things are actually there. I felt it actually worked really well as an exercise in seeing things differently. Yes, it kind of channeled areas of classic vampire lore, classic mythological lore. You have, obviously, the dryads, you have the fairies, you have the centaurs, of course. I'm tempted to say horny beasts, but in various ways. Well, they are, quite literally, in many ways, and you could use all sorts of phrases for that. And I think it was a nice sort of metaphor for the whole sort of way in which we sometimes don't look at things, or we take things at face value, and we don't see some of the things that go beneath the surface. So I think on the one level, it worked very much as an action-adventure, sorcery, fantasy package, upgraded, and so on. But on the other hand, it did seem to work very much as a narrative in itself, which sort of raised a number of things. It was interesting the way it seemed to shift along the way, and I initially I thought, oh, Hope, we heard it there, the human, other, preternatural organisation that was all ethical, preternatural ethical society that was, I thought, oh, another four-letter acronym and adventure series. I was thinking, are we going to get bits of Torchwood here? Are we going to get elements that were coming through within that? I also felt it was at times a bit of an adult Harry Potter that was coming through. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those areas where I could certainly see incarnations and interpretations being read. Yeah, I think as Jill sort of rightly pointed out, there is a fair amount of explicit content that's around. And I think it's an interesting line in terms of that, how much is actually genuinely necessary and how much is actually sort of appropriate or could possibly have been changed. I mean, there's liberal use of the F word in various ways, which, again, you think, not too sure where that goes. But overall, I felt that working through it, much like yourself, Jill, I'm tempted, let's say, to actually go to the third in the series and the first of the series, and I think spellcrackers.com. That was an interesting notion, the fact that you actually have... That was the unique perspective, that the Cide Faye, the lead character portrayed, of course, as Genevieve, Jenny Taylor, Genevieve Taylor, is somebody who her power as such is actually breaking spells. And the suggestion that you had a physical explosion that kind of, you know, set off all sorts of other bits and pieces. And Jill Appleton.
Well, these books are so popular, these vampire books in the library, I thought I'll have to try them to see why everybody likes them so much. But I didn't, it didn't do it for me. I didn't really like it. I'm not very fussed on the gory bits, the blood bits. So definitely, you know, vampires is never going to work. I think it was well written. You know, I think she's definitely a talented writer, but it just wasn't my cup of tea.
I mean, one's tempted to also say a lot of the current vogue for vampire books can be traced back certainly to Anne Rice's work, Interview with a Vampire. And if people are expecting the cliched vampire of Bela Lugosi and Christopher Lee and Bram Stoker's Dracula and so on, they're not going to get it. You're going to get a whole range of things that work through with respect to issues relating to reflections of vampires as being outsiders, you know, outsiders within society. And you know, there was that suggestion that we live in a world which, I mean, I'm reminded of the Arthur C. Clarke line that whenever something is sufficiently advanced technologically, it's indistinguishable from that of magic. And, you know, there's no attempt to explain. And understandably, Susan McLeod doesn't make any attempt to explain the magic that's there. It just is. It happens. Now, a harsh critic might turn around and say, well, you know, they're in this problem predicament. Just have an explosion, bang, it's all sorted, etc. But I think she does weave in a number of kind of traditional things, because there are things like nymphs and wood spirits, and, you know, perhaps it should have been set in Yorkshire, nymphs and shepherds.
And also, let's face it, we've seen the popularity of vampire books grow and grow and grow, with lots of series on the telly, films.
Vampire Diaries, yeah, True Blood,
so many things. Slayer. So, you know, what she's taken there is she's taken this obvious fascination for one area. And I'm sure if there was more magical things out there on the telly and stuff, there'd be people out there who'd be really into it and have things. You know, you see people with having the teeth at Whitby, don't you? Having the teeth put in, like the vampire teeth and stuff. So it's not a mad step forward, really, to see how you would have clubs and things if there was real vampires, where you would have humans who would collect their...
Bite me now.
It's not an unrealistic thought, really,
yeah.
Because you can see from the popularity of it.
Very much so, and we haven't even mentioned, of course, the Arpats, a world of Twilight and the rest of the things, which, again, has moved through that. I mean, I think it's certainly aiming at a more mature market than the Twilight series.
Yeah, definitely.
In the same way as I think Twilight was being packaged as, if you've gone through Harry Potter, then Twilight is the next step along from that point of view. So I think we're kind of talking about, if you're looking at it, I wouldn't suggest it's for a preteen audience in any way, shape or form.
No.
But I think we're certainly talking about, I would say probably 14, 15 upwards would be able to actually read it and appreciate it. And yes, I mean, there is another area which is, it works very much in the kind of classic movie line of a comic strip feature and various other things. I mean, I can see in the current vogue and growing, never-ending vogue of comics heroes and all the rest of the bits and pieces, that the character of Genevieve Taylor, yeah, I mean, from the point of view, did you feel a liberated woman, a liberated fae, a liberated cide fae? Interesting sort of line, really, to talk a lot about body, out-of-body experiences, life, death, passages between the two, etc. I would just do a slight cautionary. Don't attempt any of the kind of death transmutations you see described in the book. It's not good. It's not clever. Not in our version of reality.
No.
Just trying to walk through that. So, Suzanne McLeod, spellcrackers.com, The Cold Kiss of Death. As we say, Jenny Taylor finds the M in magic and mayhem and murder. Score, Jill Prowse.
I'm going to give it an 8 because I enjoyed it.
And I'm going to match that 8. I'm going to see that match and I'm going to say it's an 8 from me as well.
I'm going for a 6 because it just wasn't my thing.
Well, there you are. It's just relevance and all the rest of the sort of bits and pieces there. Now, talking about fantasy, of course, Ramsay Campbell, referred to by The Telegraph as Britain's greatest living horror writer. In fact, he has his birthday just the day after mine, actually, you know, and also the day after J.R.R. Tolkien's. Oh, there we are. That's an interesting thing. Walking through there. Ramsay is one of a whole group of fine folk who will be present at the Middlesbrough Literary Festival. Is that not the case, Jill?
It is. The Literary Festival starts on the 4th of June. Ramsay Campbell will be appearing at Middlesbrough Reference Library on the 7th of June.
And we've got Graham Harper, BAFTA award-winning director of many of Doctor Who fantasy, also appearing together with Shane Rimmer, whose biography From Thunderbirds to Pterodactyls is a must-read text, and that's taking place...
That's on the 11th of June, also at the Middlesbrough Central Library.
And if you want to catch up with that, and also catch up with Sarah Pinborough, Ramsay Campbell, a few other sort of fine folk, simply go to the southsidebroadcasting.com site. Book of the month, of course. You might be listening to this show via it at the very moment, so you don't need to be told this, but alternatively, there is a sci-fi and cult scenario there, which covers all sorts of things from Sci-Fi London through SFX Magazine, through indeed lots of things. And hopefully, we might indeed have a chat with Suzanne McLeod on the whole thing and sort of find out how true to life, because I noticed, Jill Prowse, you're actually wearing an outfit which looks very similar to that actually portrayed on the colour by on the cover of the book by indeed the artist for this whole text.
It must have been subliminal message.
Yeah, exactly. That's but I think we're okay, because hopefully vampires won't be around too much this time of day. So that's the important thing. And next month's book of the month is?
Well, we're going for a book. You might have received this if you were involved in World Book Night in March. Lots of books were given away for free, and the book we're doing next month was one of them. It's called One Day by David Nichols. So if you did get a book on World Book Night, if you have a look in the back, there's a reference number in there, and you can go on the website worldbooknight.org and register your book, and then you can just track where your books gone, who's been reading it, and if you passed it on to other people, they can register it as well. So if you have got one of those books, don't forget to go onto the website and just add your name there to all the rest. But yes, that's what we'll be doing next month.
So much wondrous, genuine interactivity. That, of course, and the whole range of book festivals that are actually taking place. Obviously, we look ahead to the Middlesbrough Book Festival, following the Lincoln Book Festival, and, of course, the World's Words, which actually is later on in the year, of course, Lincoln Heyday, etc. Jill Prowse, Jill Appleton, thanks for your contributions today, as always. Well, it's your show, Jill. I don't know if I can be yourself for it.
Oh, thank you, Alex, for joining me.
Fantastic stuff. We'll see you again soon.
From Southside to the world, and in association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.